Welcome to Trial by Wine. We take a closer look at crimes that highlight how fascinating humans can be. Schmitty, Swanee and Clarkey visit crimes and run them through their jury of three, debating both sides of the case to agree an appropriate, if totally fictitious, sentence. Please be advised, Trial by Wine may include explicit or disturbing content and will include drunken rambling. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, how are we?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, I'm a bit shell-shocked from the last episode. Yeah. But I will tell you, it is a funny anecdote, but it was not a funny time. But in that story when you were talking, you used the word perineum at one point and you sort of were like, is this right? And, you know, whatever. And it made me think about when Mum was dying in the last sort of 48 hours.
There we go.
They're back.
That's quite funny.
Yeah, that's all right. Clarkey somehow just joined us. Yeah, so when Mum was dying, the doctor...
There you go.
That's sort of thing Mum would have said. Yeah. The doctor took us into a room and basically said, look, you know, your mother is now actively dying. And Mum had abdominal cancer, gallbladder and liver. But the doctor meant to say peritoneum. Yeah, the peritoneum. And she said, so she was talking about the cancer in the peritoneum, but she said the cancer in the perineum.
Perineum.
And I didn't have the heart to say, has it moved? It's grown very swiftly. I thought, I think you're saying something you don't mean to say. And then she was like, peritoneum. And no one said anything at the time, but I said to my sister later, did you hear that? And she goes, yeah. I was like, the Americans call it your taint.
I've never heard that, your taint.
They call it the taint, yeah. I don't know what that's about, but yeah. But Mum did not have cancer of the taint. So,
well,
as
I've
it turned
got to
out.
Tell you, I've just looked something up. Mm. There's someone, you know, an old boss of mine many years ago in one of my first ones, her husband, I used to think he called it Biffer's Bridge, but I've just looked up Biffer's Bridge and it's called also Biffin Bridge. The perineum, the area between the scrotum and anus, or the vagina and anus, and he used to say you've got to be careful you don't, like, knock yourself on me when you get caught when you're in between Biffer's Bridge. But it was Biffin, apparently. I wonder why it's called Biffin. Oh, the soft piece of skin between the vagina and the anus that your balls biff against when blowing the back doors off a woman.
I thought back doors.
When blowing the back doors off a woman.
God, thank God your door's shut.
I've never understood it, and I've always thought it was Biffers, not Biffin. Biffin's Bridge.
Okay, well, you learn something new every single day.
Oh, Biffin's Bridge in Arspedia. My God, army rumors. The bit between a woman's genitalia that you biff your balls on. Okay. The actual Biffin Bridge, which has become a euphemism for a certain delicate area in the lower parts.
Okay, maybe enough about taints and Biffin bridges and stuff. How are we? We all good?
Great, yes.
Right, good.
Sorry for lowering the tone there.
That's all right. Well, I started it. We're going to jump straight to introductions, I think, because we're doing a back-to-back. I'm Schmitty.
I'm Swanee.
And I'm Clarkey. And together we are...
Trial by wine. Beautiful. And what are we drinking?
Well,
you boys still on beers?
No, we've changed. Ooh. Do you want us to go first?
Ooh. You've changed. Yes, please.
Okay. We've changed. You better believe it. If you listened to us last episode, maybe you'll notice. So we are having a spiced rum, Captain Morgan's, with
pirate juice.
With a dried ginger.
Dried ginger ale. Beautiful. Delicious.
Well,
stormy, isn't it? Very nice, very nice. I'm still on the Fotley Vermouth. I've just got some new ice balls. Vermouth.
Ooh, and Swanee, have you now?
What kind of soda drink do you have? My vermouth for my foot.
I've got a sparkling water.
All right, well, I'm having a vermouth for the fussle in my moot.
Fussle in your moot, that's okay. When you're talking about balls in your...
Vermont. Just cup your ice balls for a bit. They'll warm up and you'll be able to breathe again properly.
Tell you what, these balls are amazing. Can you see them? They're massive.
Amaze balls.
Can you see them, Swanee?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You see the giant... Tony bought these silicon ice things, molds. Which, you know, molds. But they last for ages. So The last two took me all the way through 2 hours of an episode, which when you listen to it will be probably an hour, but we had a lot of technical difficulties.
Well, I was going to say only if you edit out the technical difficulties.
Who's got a story for us today?
I have. I'm good to go.
All right. Okay. Well, it is hoping it's slightly more uplifting or at least amusing than the last one, and I don't cry in this one.
This one will be, yes. The reason it will be, it's quite a short story, so I've added some other things into it to one, make it longer for everyone, but also hopefully a whole lot more enjoyable as well. So
you'll pat it out.
Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, so today the travel theme continues, and this week we're going to head to Peru.
Oh, lovely. So
There'll be no
shortage of places. You've been everywhere.
Oh, my God. I know, right? So Peru was amazing.
Guinea pigs.
They do get a mention in the story.
Who? I miss that. What did you say?
Guinea pigs. They're delicious. Did you have any guinea pig when you were there?
Oh, God, no. It looked so gross. We did this.
It doesn't look good, but apparently it tastes amazing.
I missed something. Do you eat guinea pigs in Peru?
They have a meal that is roasted guinea pig, and it's got another name.
On a spit. Spit roasted guinea pig.
And it was gross, wasn't it? Came out head and all and
teeth.
The meat was fatty and I think if you got the nice bits of meat, it was okay, but people were picking over it.
They do look quite bony, you know. They look a bit like a rabbit, but you don't normally serve your rabbit, as you say, with teeth.
On the plate, yeah.
Claws, anyway, what have you.
It was a delicacy, and I'm sure it's very nice, but, you know, I'm just a little bit too fussy.
Not for you.
Let's put it down to that. Things we loved about Peru, Machu Picchu, absolutely incredible. Lake Titicaca was fascinating. And the Nazca lines, we did from the Peru side and caught a plane in. And, God, it was amazing. Some fun facts about Peru. So the Amazon River starts its journey in Peru. The second one, perhaps not surprisingly, Peru is home to over 70% of the world's alpaca population. Although I feel like the Shire of Indai is trying to take away some of that because we have lots of them up here now. This one, let me know if it doesn't surprise you, but I think it will. The potato originated in Peru and there are over 3,000 varieties. Did you know that?
No.
I just would have thought
I knew it from South America. No, I knew it was South American. You've clearly not watched any Blackadder.
Long enough to have forgotten it all. But I have watched lots of it back in the day.
In England they had, and in Ireland they had, I mean, potatoes are pretty plain and bland, but they just had nothing. They didn't have pumpkins either.
Then they had many of them.
They're from the New World. New World.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Peru is home to the highest navigable lake in the world, which is Lake Titicaca.
Titicaca.
And, we were calling it Booby Poos. And on Lake Titicaca, people live on islands made of reeds. Fascinating legal information. Did you know that in Peru, sexual relations with a llama or alpaca are illegal?
Only in Peru? Surely everywhere.
What?
Could you cross the border with one of your alpacas and it would be okay?
Have a little bit of a sexy time.
Argentina or somewhere?
If its head was on one side of the border and its feet on the other, is that legal?
Oh, my goodness. That's a push me, pull you.
How about this, though? When we have all the jokes about sheep with Kiwis and Australians. Unmarried young men are even prohibited from having a female llama or alpaca live in their homes. They're temptresses.
They've got those beautiful eyes, those big eyes with their long eyelashes, and they just flutter them at you, and the next thing you know, you can't help yourself.
You can't even have a female one. What about a male one?
Well, that's fine. I mean, no one wants to do them up the, you know, poo end.
Jetsy.
But a female,
I mean,
well, they might. Anything goes.
Someone would.
Anyway,
wasn't it that bloke who was caught on a ladder in a paddock trying to do some kind of farm animal.
Oh, what, a cow?
We discussed that in one of them.
With a ladder.
Could have been a cow, yeah.
Ladder.
Yeah.
A ladder.
Or a bucket, like a stool, a step stool kind of thing. Anyway, I'm sure we discussed that. Maybe I just read it and thought we should. Anyway, so as with every week, we're here to talk true crime. And so whilst researching my story, I found a number of interesting stories that I thought were worthy of discussion. And so rather than going into the detail of them, I thought I'd just share with you a couple of the headlines and a little bit of an intro. If through any of that you do think we should cover a story, Schmitty, where should people email us at?
Mouthful.com.au. With a mouthful.com.
Trial by line@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well done. All right, so the first story is shoe shop thieves get off on the wrong foot. Three people broke into the shop in the central city of Huancayo, maybe, and made off with more than 200 trainers, but they were all for the right foot.
Wow.
Well, glad you asked. The footage shows the criminals breaking the padlock on the shop shutter in the middle of the night and using a tricycle to take boxes of trainers from different brands.
How are they all right? Because if they're in a box.
Because they took 200 boxes. They must have taken all the ones where you know how they've got them on display?
Where they had a display, yeah.
So they've got all the left ones on display and they've taken all the boxes.
Or the shop only has the ones on display. We've only got it in one size. And it's
one
on display.
One shoe in each box kind of thing.
Yeah,
one shoe in each box, the right one. They got all the left ones up on display and the right one.
Got the wrong one, the right one. Jesus. All right.
That would be very
frustrating. On a tricycle.
I love it's on a tricycle.
Tricycle. Tricycle. Tricycle.
The footage must look like this.
I want to ride my tricycle.
Like an adult riding a little kid's tricycle.
200 boxes. How does that fit on a tricycle?
200.
What were they, circus?
I'm assuming it's like an electrical tricycle, like a tuk-tuk, not a
child's trike, which is what I'm
saying. Still got boxes on that.
It's only, they've only got one shoe in each.
I have some pretty fancy ones.
Oh.
Well, true, okay. you could consolidate them easily enough. Local police chief Edwin Diaz told Peruvian media, "We've gathered evidence at the scene. With the footage and the fingerprints, we'll be able to locate those individuals." So they're going to get caught. All right, next story. So from the 18th of September, which is actually, we were in Lima at this time, Peru declares state of emergency in parts of capital after crime spike.
Is that what you saw?
What were you doing?
We did.
Oh, is that somewhere else?
Well, we didn't know that there was anything going on there, but we did see a lot of military people. Remember in that square, and we're going, God, there's a lot of military.
I did take
a sneaky picture of them because I thought that was a lot of people. That's anyway, so trouble. This must have been what it was. So Peruvian President Dina Boluarte, maybe, said on Monday her government has declared a state of emergency in three districts hit by a spike in crime, a measure that allows the military to help enforce security. In recent days, police reported attacks in San Juan, including the throwing of a war grenade into a nightclub, which, with another nearby grenade attack, a war grenade.
A domestic grenade
into a nightclub.
Versus a war grenade.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly wasn't a festival one. Grenade.
Music festival or concert grenade.
Yeah. No, celebrations. A wedding grenade. Which, with another nearby grenade attack, left at least 15 injured. So, funnily enough, if you ever find yourself bored and want to Google Peru declares state of emergency, it happens a lot, an awful lot, like several times a year, kind of a lot. And then there's this story. It's the story of the Peru 2, which I just like because it rhymes. It sounds like something out of Dr. Seuss. Michaela McCollum from Dungannon, Northern Ireland, and Melissa Reid from Lindsay, Scotland, were arrested on the 6th of August 2013 on suspicion of drug smuggling at Jorge Chavez International Airport in Lima after their luggage was found to contain 12 kilograms of cocaine.
Jesus.
They initially claimed they'd been coerced by an armed gang, but subsequently pleaded guilty. I'm not sure those two things prove that one mutually of them exclusive. Wasn't correct. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I could totally imagine being coerced by an armed gang and then going, oh, sorry, I didn't say that for obvious reasons. The headline before I get to the real story, headline story before the story is New Species, What the Scientists Revealed at Mexican Congress During Second UFO Session.
Oh, days after. I know this story. Yeah, go on, go, go. Yes, great.
Days after Mexico Congress stunned the world with their display of two alleged Peruvian alien corpses, yeah. A second congressional hearing was held on Tuesday. Researchers testified before Mexico's Congress and declared that the previously displayed three-fingered Peruvian mummies were authentic. However, they did not confirm that the remains were aliens, as per Reuters. In September, the non-human alien corpses claimed to be the 1,000-year-old fossilized remains of extraterrestrial individuals were presented in windowed boxes by journalist and UFOologist James Morsan. Yeah, so anyway, they were, whilst they said that they were that, they then found out that they were just dummies or
junk. Yeah.
Yeah, completely not. But I love, someone's jumped to at the national UFO thing, someone said they're real.
Oh, no, the UFOlogist was like, they're absolutely real. I have evidence. Everyone's like, Peru's got evidence of UFOs and aliens. I've seen these things. Someone would need to explain to me how the thing that I've seen could create and fly in some kind of ahead of our technology space vehicle three fingers. To get to this planet. Oh, the three fingers thing is probably not that much, like if it was using mind control or something, but they're funny looking little things. They're very traditionally like alien looking, you know, like what's in the human psyche of what an alien looks like.
Yes, which is more than likely not going to be.
Not what an alien looks like, yes.
and then, of course, there's the usual horrors such as Joran van der Sloot, a Dutch man living in Peru who has been called a serial killer, pathological liar and a monster. His own lawyer once called him a psychopath who should never be believed. So, yes, once more, Schmiggy, if anyone wants to know more of any of those, where do they contact us at?
Trialbywine@gmail.com.
Righty-o.
That's trialbywine@gmail.com.
Can we have a Llama Passions discount code?
Oh, I'll have to set up the whole website for no one.
I mean, we could, Llama but it would be illegal.
Clownpassions.com.
And the promo code is LlamaPassions20.
Yes, correct. Despite those cracking headlines, I settled on today's story because it involves Australian, six Australians.
Just before you go on, I just want to go back to the state of emergency that happens all the time, according to you in Peru.
Yeah.
So does that make Peru like the Henny Penny of South America?
No, I think – so we spoke about – some of the unrest in Mexico the other week. I'm going straight into taking it seriously without acknowledging the
witty
joke. But it was a good one.
This is my joke.
Yeah, the complete hilarity.
And Swanee's clearly finding it very funny too with her mocking hello. Yes.
So we spoke a little bit about some of the political unrest in Central and South America, and I think Peru.
Did we? I think we talked a little bit about fucking terrifying drug dealers and all that comes with it. That was
correct.
Stayed with me.
That there is a lot of that that goes on. And so some of that is, I think there's a lot of push for political unrest in South America at the moment from people who are fans of political unrest, which I feel like there's growing numbers around the world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think Peru's in one of those spots where it's kind of challenged. The story I settled on because it has Australians and, in fact, six of them, who all took a spontaneous trip to Peru to see the wonders on offer. But first up, my sources. MamaMia.com.au, ABC.com.au, News.com.au, 9News.com.au, and HeraldSun.com.au. A lot going on, right? Who wouldn't love a trip to Peru to see all the sights and enjoy their delicious cuisine? Maybe Schmitty some roasted guinea pig.
Yum, 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 yum.
Nom, 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 nom. Finger licking good. Back in January 2012, six young Australians did exactly that. However, things didn't go exactly to plan. Jessica Vo embarked on a three-month trip to
they
South America.
Guinea pigs. It was long pig. Am I that close? No.
No.
Can't be.
No. Uncharacteristically far away.
Where does the long pig name come from again?
Human. Human cannibalism.
No, I know that, but where does it come from?
Because apparently we taste like pork.
Where the other
humans taste white, like pig with the other white meat.
Oh, I don't know about that. I believe that fat's a bit yellow. I'd be like the other yellow meat. But good for crackling, maybe.
Oh, crackle pig. Nom, 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 nom. Better than guinea pig.
Absolutely.
So Jessica Vo embarked on a three-month trip to the South American nations of Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru. The trip was a gift from her boyfriend at the time to celebrate overcoming ovarian cancer, she tells Mamma Mia. Jessica, her boyfriend Hugh, and Hugh's younger brother Tom meet three other Australians, Andrew, Sam, and Harrison, on the flight over, and the six become travel buddies for their South American adventure. When they arrived in Peru in January, they rented a 15th floor apartment on the Malecón Cisneros. It's an expensive, popular street that snakes along Lima's scenic coastline. And on January the 19th, they checked into the hotel around midday. They went down the street to buy some groceries and stuff. You know, Schmitty, how you do when the houseboat, go and stock up for supplies.
Absolutely. Yep, yep.
And they returned around 3 p.m. to relax in the hotel. So they're sitting there, you know, some of them putting groceries away. Some of them are listening to a bit of music. Some of them are having a bit of a chat. And then they hear...
Someone fell off the balcony.
Well, So they all kind of look at each other and go, God, what was that? And then go over to the balcony window.
Oh, well done, Schmitty.
And they see a body on the ground.
Oh.
Yeah. No. There's a body on the ground. If only. The body was that of Rodriguez Vilches, the hotel's 45-year-old doorman, and all six were shocked at what they saw.
Why wouldn't you be? I mean,
I know,
right? You're just only in stock in the fridge. Nothing will go wrong. You'll be right.
Yeah,
stock
all
in the
fine,
fridge and listen to some tunes, and the next thing I know, the doorman's hit the ground. I'm on 15th floor. That's terrible.
Turn the music up and get me a beer.
Hold my beer.
The police arrive and they start questioning people. And so on numerous occasions, they came in and out of our six Australians' apartment to ask questions. There was a big language barrier, and so it made it quite difficult to explain what had happened, but they told police everything they could, which wasn't a lot. And just in terms of the language barrier, you know, sometimes it's hard to order a coffee when you don't speak the language. I don't know how you explain what happened in this situation, but anyway, they did. And the following day, they had a visit from the police, just so that they could provide their official statements. However, the police were questioning them to see if they knew more than they were admitting, and that's when the alarm bells started ringing. At one point, the police tried to take their passports. Eventually, the police left, satisfied with what they were told. One of the group, who was a little sus on the whole thing, contacted the Australian Embassy in Lima to determine what they should do. And they were advised to continue their travel and assured everything was resolved in terms of their involvement in the crime. A woman had reported...
Did you speak to the receptionist?
A woman had reported that she'd seen Mr. Vilches fall from the roof of the apartment building, and the death was ruled a suicide. And the group continued their travels, eventually returning home and trying to forget the tragic incident they had witnessed. Then, in June, about 3 months after they'd returned home, some of them started receiving odd messages on Facebook, often in Spanish. It was when they saw a television segment from Peru and local media were labelling them as killers.
Oh.
They thought it was a ridiculous claim, obviously, due to their innocence, and because they all had clear consciences, and they didn't think it would eventuate into anything more. However, investigators reopened their inquiries after a public campaign by Mr. Rodriguez Vilches's brother, Wimba. He didn't believe.
Wimba.
I knew it was coming.
Great minds.
Great work. Great work.
Wimba. So Wimba didn't believe his brother would commit suicide, and he claimed that the Australians dragged his brother into their room, bashed him, threw him to his death from apartment 1501. Wimba became convinced of this after a dream in which his brother visited him, and he said...
Oh, fair enough then.
Not after he'd thrown him off himself.
No, no. He's got good evidence.
He's just traumatised.
Okay.
Wimba went running to his brother to embrace him. Lena, my brother, he said... Let me go. Don't hold me. They killed me. I didn't want to die. He says his brother's ghost also visited their sister.
Oh.
Lino said he'd been arguing with somebody. His hands were moving out, and there was a tall man and a short man and a girl. After she said, my little brother, tell me where did this happen? And my brother said, 9 plus 6.
1501.
Added up. 9 plus 6.
I think it's 15 something. Yeah. There you go. 9 plus 6 added up.
9 plus 6
Just tell me directly.
I'm not good at maths. 27.
Can't figure out the math. The math.
No.
I can do anything, but I won't do math.
And so
that
we
like
said,
"Happy." Perfectly based song for that.
It's in the 15th. In the 15th floor. They've killed Lino. Let's go to the police and see how the investigation is going.
Remember Eric. Remember Eric Planensek. Remember Eric Planensek's Winter Sail. Every story I do, they did it. They did it there. They did it. So for God's sake, just
I've
say it.
I've got to repeat it so you get it. No, but that's I'm quoting them. That's the problem. I'm quoting.
I know, right?
Like
so
that.
If this is what's being said in dreams, you need to say, mate, spit it out. Say it clearly.
Right. Just get to the point.
Don't have all day.
Anyway, so they did get the calculator out and they worked out that 9 plus 6 is 15. And then extrapolated from there.
Oh, it's evidence, hard evidence.
100%. So what they've worked out is that they were making an excessive amount of noise in apartment 1501, where the six Australians were staying, Wimba said. My brother went upstairs to get them to turn down the noise. Yeah, yeah, 100%. That could be us, but anyway, except they're not six of us. My brother went upstairs to get them to turn down the noise and there was a misunderstanding as he only spoke Spanish and they only spoke English. They hit my brother and threw him over the... Yeah, yeah.
Sounds right.
The evidence against the Australians was slim. It included a $10 Australian banknote that was found in the dead man's pocket.
They could have tipped him when they brought up the shit earlier, yeah.
Do you reckon? Also, that later went missing. So there was no $10 note.
Yeah.
And
so it didn't exist.
There was a footprint on a small window of the group's hotel room. The group were requested to return to Peru to provide statements in court.
No. Thank you very much, but no.
That's I'm good. No. I appreciate the chat. See you later.
Dreams come next. Oh, God.
Obviously,
find some evidence and extradite me.
So they were going, it's completely unacceptable, obviously very unreasonable, and they thought they're in a really bad situation because if they refused to return, an Interpol arrest warrant could be issued. But if they decided to attend court, they may not receive a fair trial. So they hired Peruvian lawyers to defend them. They requested to provide their evidence via video link. However, in July 2013, they were ordered to front court in Lima next month after a judge rejected their request to deliver evidence via video link from Australia. They were ordered to pay $2,000 to the courts as surety and to attend the inquest on September 30 and October 1 and 2, pending an appeal hearing on September 19. Thankfully, they appealed and the appeal was successful. And they were allowed to provide their statements remotely. The Australians' lawyers approached forensic investigator Jose Pablo Barrebar to fight the case against them because Mr. Barrebar, who worked for the United Nations for 12 years as its resident forensic expert for the War Crimes Tribunal from Rwanda and the former Yugoslavia.
Jesus!
Like, it's probably the most qualified or overqualified. Yep. Yeah, yeah, he's got some shit going on. So he said when they approached him, "I'm very picky about the work I do. The case has to demonstrate flagrant violation of due process, and I only usually deal with human rights violation cases. However, when he reviewed autopsy, the police and forensic reports, as well as the prosecution submissions, he thought it might be worth looking into a little bit further. His investigation led him to the building and room 1501 where the group stayed. As he stood at the window from where Mr. Vilches was supposedly thrown, he glanced at his forensics colleague in astonishment because he noted that the space's size is slightly over 1.1 metres by 850 centimetres, which in feet is probably 4 foot, not even, by two.
It's a small window.
Small. Two people did not fit into this little space if standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder. Two people cannot stand in this space and carry a third person. Six people in here trying to throw a person out is physically impossible. He came to realise the case does involve human rights violations, and he decided that if he could contribute, he would. There was no real eureka moment, he said. Just very quickly, it just became clear this was a complete nonsense case. He thought it must be that the judge found himself under tremendous pressure from Mr. Vilches's family to start an investigation. His report concludes, Mr. Barabas, there are no eyewitnesses or any physical evidence to support any of the arguments used. On the contrary, the allegations seem to have been built upon successive speculations based on hearsay testimonies and the passing of days.
And dreams.
Yeah, and dreams, yeah. He produced a report outlining his findings. However, initially attempts to present the report in court were blocked by the judge, who refused to look at it. He advised authorities in Peru to drop a murder case trial against the six Australians, describing the case as completely absurd. The court hearing eventually took place in November 2012. The prosecution relied on three pieces of evidence linking the Australians to the doorman: a footprint on the windowsill of the apartment, some marks on the atrium wall, and the Australian $10 note found in the doorman's pocket. But the prosecution says the note was destroyed in policeman's washing machine.
What?
What?
I feel like note's a,
we washed the evidence. I feel like
our notes are plastic.
I just pocketed it. I put, our notes are plastic, but also, why was it taken as evidence and put in something to wash in the policeman's washing machine? I popped it in my pocket and I forgot to bring it out.
Mr. Barabar suggests the other evidence falls apart almost as easily, saying a shoe print does not fit the theory of an unwilling or unconscious victim. The footprint on the windowsill is somebody standing on the windowsill facing the void, for example, to clean the windows, he said. The police investigation has been inconsistent since the beginning. It has been incoherent. It is an investigation where you're trying to join the dots of things that cannot be joined. He said there is another explanation that is far more logical. Mr. Vilches fell from a service window on the other side of the building, and on the inspection with the judge, we saw something that looks like a handprint. And the interesting thing is the following. Right below here, there are some skidding marks, some friction marks right below where the handprint was. I don't understand how he's on the other side of the building, but, yeah, he's obviously, they're saying here's the point where they think he fell from. The courts also heard that police pressured witnesses to make false statements and ignored vital photographic evidence in their case against the group. A maintenance attendant who was on duty on the day of the death gave evidence that Mr. Vilches's family insisted he did not make a statement and that the police pressured him to give a certain version of events. Mm-hmm. Witness testimony supported claims made by the Aussie group. Two forensic officers admitted they did not enter the Australian group's apartment where the murder allegedly took place, instead basing their reports on photos supplied by police.
What?
I don't think that happens in Law and Order.
I just looked at the photo and, yeah, no, they did it.
Show us the pics, that's enough. Not one person said they heard or complained about loud music. No one saw the Australians were drunk. No one heard a fight. No one saw Mr. Rodriguez fall. There is no evidence that he was in the apartment 1501 on the day of his death. Sorry. No one saw Mr. Vilches fall. There is no evidence that he was in apartment 1501 on the day of his death, and the forensics prove that he fell from the other side of the building. Following the hearing, the courts go away to consider the case and work out what they're going to do. 4.5 years later, you can't make this shit up.
Four and a half years later, hanging over your head for four and a half years.
The court determines that there's no case to be heard against the Australians. The six were advised by consular officials that a prosecution wouldn't proceed. The court notified all parties, including the Dorman's family, who were given an opportunity to appeal. They were finally advised on September 2016 that no appeal had been submitted by the family. In a statement, they said, the past 4.5 years have caused immense uncertainty, frustration, as well as emotional and financial strain. The immeasurable stress has left a dreadful toll on all of us. And there was no compensation provided to the Peru Six. And that, my friends, is the story.
I just had a look at the Peru Six. I really feel sorry for them. They just look like a bunch of kids.
Because of the way they look?
Yeah. Well, yes,
no,
because of the way
they're just
look.
Kids.
They're just young people. I could imagine a group. You're just going on like, holiday. And I 100%. Love, I can sum it when I read it, it was unpacking the groceries. You know, I could just imagine you've just moved, got into a new place. We all know that thing. You don't know anywhere. You just get there. Yeah. Let's get a couple of things.
The
I know that exact moment.
It all.
And everywhere you go, yeah, it doesn't matter where you are. You're here and I don't know what that was. What was that? I can't even imagine how awful that must be for them. Because I don't think I'm ever going to do anything wrong. Growing up, another one of my fears, sometimes I think this is like a therapy session for me to share all of my fears. Because one of my children said to me the other day that he didn't think that he couldn't cope if he ever went to jail. And I was telling him that was also one of my fears as a child, that I'd end up in prison. But I'd always figured that if I end up in prison, it would be because there's something like this where I was wrongly accused. I wasn't going to do anything wrong to end up there. But this is the kind of stuff that terrifies me, right, where you've done nothing and you end up having your life, potentially could go so badly. Oh, that really upsets me. That story really upsets me. Poor kids.
During the 4.5 years, they couldn't travel because they were under investigation,
of course
so
they
to
couldn't,
speak.
No.
So they were couldn't do anything. Confined, like just, I mean, not confined as in their house or anything, but no overseas travel, which for Australians is an
Frank
important
and everyone
part for a lot
go
of Australians.
It's been my life for the last 6 years, whatever. Oh. Everyone else goes overseas, not me, not since COVID.
Mm. That's not 6 years.
Mm. 5.
Did you say 6 years?
We went over in 19. I don't remember what year it was, and it was so 2 years after that, which was 2020. So 2018, we went. We were supposed to go in 2020. That got cancelled, and I haven't managed to get there since. But anyway, not about me.
I reckon we still had an overseas trip for 2 of those 3 years.
Oh, you did. Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know that more than I do by the sounds of it. Oh, yeah. So the other thing about the hotel is that they'd been backpacking and they decided to treat themselves to a few nights in a hotel.
Oh, God, it just gets worse, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I think I want to send, like, if we're doing any form of sentence, I feel sorry for the brother, right? Because obviously he was very disturbed by the death of his brother and felt the need to carry on and feel like someone had to be to blame for that. Are they a very Catholic or religious culture?
I think so. Quite. Yeah.
So there could well be a stigma. Like if as it was ruled a suicide, there's a good chance that, you know, there was a stigma associated with that. And so it would be better to blame the Johnny foreigners in room 1501.
Yeah. I mean, funny that they're the two options, not an accident.
It was ruled a suicide though. So I think in order to try and get it overturned, you had to find some other thing that would be big enough. I just can't believe the waste of money. You're like the waste of time for the court, police and all the rest of it. Yeah. I do feel sorry for the brother and for the sister and the family. Doesn't excuse them carrying on like pork chops and creating the situation, but I feel sorry for them. For the Peru Six, you know, it's one of those ones where you just want to wave a magic wand and it never happened to them.
Yeah.
It's the good place kind of thing where on the day they said, let's go to this hotel and treat ourselves, it was booked out. They couldn't get to that one, so they went to another hotel and no one fell or committed suicide there and they had a nice time and they returned and they've been having a good time ever since.
You know how sometimes you struggle to make your point when you're trying to go through any of these sort of formal processes? I mean, I regularly struggle to make my point. I had to ring recently because we're going to India and Sri Lanka, as I've told you, and I got a message saying, mm-hmm. We've confirmed your flights. So I go, oh, sweet, as look at them. And the flights that they've confirmed are from Oslo to Keflavik, which is Norway to Iceland. I'm like, oh, here we go. So I ring up and I go, hi, look, you've confirmed my flights, but I'm going to Sri Lanka and India, and I gave them all of the booking details so they could see all of that. The only problem is the flights are from Oslo to Keflavik. And the lady goes, oh, yeah, they're your internal flights.
In Sri Lanka and India.
So what basic I want to know is love. What yeah. I want to know is who does this man speak to when he's trying to convince the courts of his story, which is it came to us in a dream and my brother said 9 plus 6 yes. with Schmitty some kind of weird stuttering action because he had to repeat himself quite regularly. Who doesn't vet that and say, you know, that's just – I don't know, your internal flights. Why do I get that with my credible one?
Nine plus six.
Like, how do you get that direct line to somebody who will just believe you?
Was there some kind of, you know, international relations issue at the time between Australia and Peru? Like, was there some political benefit to pursuing this?
No, I don't think so. I think it's probably more something to do internally with Peru. So I was saying a little bit about the instability.
Penny.
Maybe there's something going on in the political situation at the time internally where they need to show that they're taking
doing
their people seriously.
Yeah. You
know,
seriously.
Because if you're trying to, you know, lead a country strongly, and they did get them back and they did put them in jail and they did solve the crime, so to speak. Maybe there's some of that. I don't know. It's because it just seems like such a nonsense case.
A waste of money and waste
so
of time.
Close yep. to going south real fast. I mean, God, imagine if that second appeal hadn't
not real
have been
fast,
okay.
Five years.
Well, yeah, that's true.
No, but if they'd been forced to get there, if they'd been forced to go and front up and they hadn't won the appeal to do it by video, once you're there, you're in serious danger.
Their rules apply.
I would have gone with Interpol arresting me because at least then Interpol was involved and I could say, could you pay attention to this, please, because it's nonsense.
Yeah.
I'm sure they don't hear that often.
but also, what's his name? Julian Assange takes 400,000 years to get extradited for alleged crimes. The Peru Six, they were very close to going super fast.
Sentencing? Anyone?
I think the only people that I would sentence are maybe the brother, and I know you feel for him, and I do feel for him, but maybe in light of what's happened, maybe his brother can visit him again. And his punishment can be his brother saying, no, you got that wrong. I wasn't saying 9 plus 6. It was actually something totally different. And I was saying, you know, it's not the Australians and you got it all wrong. So
it's room 69, you idiot.
Yeah, it was like, oh, no, I slipped. Or, you know, whatever it was, he had it misunderstood it. You know, just chill. It's okay.
Mm.
The 9 could have been German.
Haunted by his brother.
No, plus 6.
Nine.
Not okay. Schmitty?
Maybe the police or whoever decided to pursue this should just do another Cert 3 in policing, you know, particularly the units that cover when it's appropriate to press charges or try to extradite foreign nationals. They might need a bit of a refresher on that.
I think even going to the University of Law and Order, because that wouldn't happen. Mariska Hargitay would not let that happen.
Not at all. No. Not at all. She's too much of a boss for that. Yeah.
She's empathetic
Olivia Benson,
towards the victim,
not
but not like that. Yeah, zero.
The DA would be like, we don't have enough to prosecute. Go away.
I do think they need to get a better door bitch in terms of the, like, the legal triage. So when someone
one
does...
alive.
Not the doorman.
Ouch. Oh, sorry.
I was with you, Swanee. I thought that was, she seen my eyes. I'm like, that's harsh and inappropriate. No, you didn't mean that. Right.
I said door bitch. So, you know, when at the legal triage, so he rings in and says, hi, you know, I'm the brother. I really think that this is a miscarriage of justice because my brother came to me in a dream and said 9 plus 6, and so he must have, those six people must have done it. Come on. Is there any real evidence? And the old mate who takes the evidence home to wash it in his pocket, he needs a good
slap upside the head.
Maybe that door bitch needs to be Judith Lucy so she can go,
see, perfect. Or Kitty Flanagan.
Either of them. No,
dry, sarcastic.
So.
That's a. Let me just spin my wheel of evidentiary fact. Oh, it's a no again. It'll just be a wheel of all no's. But, yeah, the man taking the $10 note home to wash it, that's money laundering. He's guilty.
Literally.
Yeah, and as you said, it's plastic, so how did he destroy it? He melted it. Hot wash, very hot wash.
Yeah,
it never existed to start with. All right, well, that was very amusing. Thank you, Clarky.
Well done.
Nice uplift since the last
Another place I'm scared to go again now.
Oh, I'm never travelling again. I do all the UK crime, so I feel all right about going to the UK for some reason.
Yeah. Done that.
Yeah.
I reckon they'll, because some of my favourite ones that you did, Schmitty, were some Indian ones, so I'm sure the boys will come up with a whole host of other.
Yeah. Are you going to Kerala, boys? God's the Own
snakes.
Country?
Yeah, snakes.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Snakes and poisons.
Yeah, I'm going to go armed with a snake in each hand.
Oh, that looks like you were doing the Donald Trump thing. Yeah. You know when he does that?
Yes, it's awful.
Maybe.
No, I know what you mean.
He does.
What's he doing,
like
a spit roast or something?
It's a little bit like Boris Yeltsin.
Yes, I don't know. I
Jesus. All right, good story, boys. And as we say every week, miss you already.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Trial by Wine. You can contact us at trialbywine@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Trial by Wine on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support us, you can become a patron at www.patreon.com/trialbywine or visit our website www.trialbywine.com to donate to us. Your support will help us cover many more cases and apply wacky sentences. We really appreciate you listening and hope you tell everyone about us. Our cover art is by John Christo and music is by Beauchamp from Pixabay.com.